The date is December 13th, 1985, and we're watching Clue. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
And welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Colonel Mustard to my Mr. Green.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we've brought in a special guest that is appearing on our show for the first time, a podcaster who has been kind enough to allow both Colin and myself on one of his shows. He has multiple shows. Please welcome the Professor Plum to our Mustard and Green, Mr. Michael Ross.
Hello. I kind of saw myself as more of a Mr. Body, but sure, I'll go with that.
Mr. Body? Okay. Sure. If you want to be the first dead body in the movie. Yeah. So now, anyone who hasn't followed us on social media, and if you're not following us on social media, what are you doing? But I posted a while back when the episodes of Michael's podcast were dropped, when we had appeared on them. And so it was a Smallville-based conversation that we were doing with him. And it came up in Colin's episode, This Movie.
Yes.
So Michael kind of got himself invited on immediately to do this movie.
I kind of invited myself. I think that's how that works. I'm not new at this. I've done this before.
Yeah. And so with the episode of Smallville that you guys discussed, it was Michael McKeon that got you talking about this movie.
Correct.
So you've got a very big fondness, though, for Michael McKeon.
I do. He's just an amazing actor. He's in so many things that I love, but probably the first thing I think of is Clue. For many people, it might be Spinal Tap, or This is Spinal Tap. More recently, he was on Better Call Saul. It's just an amazing performance, but whenever his name pops up, the first thing I think of is Clue.
Clue, for sure. Well, this week, we are looking back at December 1985, when the movies and theaters were Spies Like Us, Young Sherlock Holmes, Enemy Mine, A Chorus Line, and of course, our movie for today, Clue, which earned $14.6 million on a $15 million budget. Not quite breaking even. Ugh, and I hate that because I love this movie.
Oh, it's so good. Spoilers, it holds up. I still love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, we will be dropping spoilers like chandeliers, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I've got four. The first is, the movie that makes a scene of the crime.
I like that.
Okay.
That's clever. Clever.
That's clever.
Yeah. Okay. Second, it's not just a game anymore.
two on the nose, I think.
Two on the nose? Okay. Next up, seven suspects, six weapons, five bodies, and three endings.
I like that one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's their way of getting you to theaters to see the alternate endings, because that was the original release structure of this movie, is that a different ending would be playing in different theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious about that watching it, because I rented the DVD from the library.
Yeah.
And it gives you the option of, like, just playing it through with one of the endings, or you can watch it, and they'll just show you all three all at once. And
ending randomizer.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was a home video release thing. When it came out in theaters, it was just one ending, and you didn't know which one you got.
Yeah,
that would be so, like, crushing. I mean, brilliant kind of to get people out, but I would be very, very annoyed if I went out and accidentally saw the same release or saw the same ending multiple times.
Yeah, the theory is that it would cause people to go back multiple times to get the different endings, but it didn't work. It just kind of made people angry, apparently, which is part of the reason why the movie didn't do really well in theaters. But I think it's a brilliant marketing move myself, but you know, what do I know?
It's a neat idea, but it didn't work. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, last tagline, murder, madness, mystery, and mayhem. More fun than you can imagine.
That's okay. I think the first one's still my favorite.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Scene of a crime. Well, they may not be the best descriptions of this movie, So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
I struggled with this one a lot, but let's see if it works. Six seemingly random strangers are invited to a hill house. After being greeted by the maid Yvette and the butler, Mr. Wadsworth, they are joined by a seventh guest, Mr. Body, and discover that he has been blackmailing all of them. And thus the game begins. The lights go out, and when they come back on, Body is dead. Or is he? With the killer in their midst, the house guests work together / scramble to uncover which of them is the murderer. Will they be able to live long enough to find out? Or will the killer succeed in taking them all out one by one? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Right on. So yeah, we touched a bit on Michael McKean already. What about the movie itself? What kind of history do you have with Clue, Michael?
Again, I was 10 years old when this movie came out for me, and I just remember watching this movie so many times. And I don't know where. I mean, I'm assuming it was probably on cable at some point, but I've watched this movie dozens of times, if not more than that. And I can't tell you the first time, I tell you the last time because it was like an hour ago, but I've watched this movie so many times growing up, and it's got a murderer's row of stars. It is insane how many people are in this movie. Ellen Brennan, Tim Curry, Madeleine McCann, Christopher Lloyd, of course, Michael McKean, Martin Mull. I think those are the heavy hitters, but just these people that were at 1985, just amazing, top of the line improvers, actors. Just it's again, the thing that struck me watching this last time was how much of this movie is just physical based comedy.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of what I think of is, you know, the wordplay, like the 1 + 2 + 2 + 1, you know, and the flame, you know, there's these like moments. But really, the majority of the movie is just people doing things. And if you're paying attention, it's so funny.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to think about the fact that Christopher Lloyd was in this and Back to the Future in the same year.
Yes.
And like, what two drastically different characters. And then just a couple years later, he's in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like, you've got these three very different characters. And it's, one thing I do find interesting about the cast is it could have been a little bit bigger, because the part of Miss Scarlet, played by Leslie Ann Warren, was originally Carrie Fisher. And she went into rehab 2 days before they started filming. And so, like, Leslie Ann Warren was brought in at the last minute. But, I mean, can you imagine this movie with Carrie Fisher in it, too? I mean...
Okay, now, I love Carrie Fisher, obviously. But I almost feel like I don't know what she would have done the role that I would have liked better. You know, I'm just trying to think about it. But as much as I love her, I kind of think Leslie Ann did an amazing job. I don't know that it would have been better with Carrie in this case. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe...
She always just reminds me of the generic brand of Susan Sarandon, is what she always...
I thought the same thing. I was like, is this Susan Sarandon's sister? Like, yeah. I actually wanted to go double check that, because like, it looks like Susan Sarandon. And I do want to touch quickly on Christopher Lloyd. How funny, did you mention these movies came out the same year? If you took a picture of Christopher Lloyd's character in this movie and a picture of Doc in that movie, you would think this was like a 50-year later shot. Same year. They look so different the way they age him up, which is why Christopher Lloyd now looks like Doc looked then, because he was only like 40 at the time, but he looked 80.
Yeah. So, Colin, now, I don't think you have any experience with this movie, though. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'd never seen it before. I'd never played the game Clue before. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you at least have the reference for the game? Like, even if you've never seen it before, you know, like in the study.
I've heard Colonel Mustard.
Yeah, okay.
And I kind of knew that. Like, I knew that the point of the game was to, like, figure out, like, who the murderer was, where they did it, and what they killed the person with. Like, I knew those kind of things, but I've never played it. And I recognize Colonel Mustard, like, I recognize some of the names. I wouldn't have known that they were from Clue.
Okay.
No, like I probably just heard them be referenced in other like pop culture things, but I didn't realize that they were from Clue necessarily.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed playing the unique versions of Clue. Like, I've got a Simpsons Clue. That's the one that I own. But yeah, I do wonder though whether there is a version of Clue out there that features these characters on it, on their cards, like photographs of these characters. I wonder if they do have a tie-in board game that they released, or whether they didn't bother because it bombed at the box office.
Yeah, I don't know. I would love to have a copy of it, though. I still play Clue occasionally with my kids. They're at the age where they still kind of enjoyed that game.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I would definitely buy a copy of the Clue, the movie, the game, if it was out there.
Okay, let's jump into Clue. It's directed by Jonathan Lynn, produced by Deborah Hill, and it's written by Jonathan Lynn. And also credited is Anthony E. Pratt, who is the creator of the game Cluedo, which became Clue once it came to the States, because it started off as a British game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first movie based on a board game. There's a fun fact for you. Like, what has there been since, though? Like, Battleship? Anything else?
Battleship.
Battleship.
That would be so bad.
Does Jumanji count? Because, I mean, I think the game came out after the movie with Jumanji. There's no, like...
Yeah, I thought like, the game Jumanji is based on the movie.
Yeah. There's no Monopoly the movie. There's no Sorry the movie. Candyland the movie.
There's probably a movie called Life. I don't know. Just want to quickly mention too that John Landis also has a story by credit on this movie.
Okay.
Yes. Which, you know, obviously Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London. Apparently he also wrote Michael Jackson's video Thriller.
He directed.
Sure.
Directed,
I guess we learned
the video. Yeah.
Okay. We learned things. But yeah, so I know him mostly from American Werewolf in London, of course. So interesting. Yeah.
There's Ouija. There's a Ouija board. There's the Ouija board horror movies.
Okay. So I've always wondered with the choice of the characters as we get introduced them, why they're all in like the opposite color of what their name actually is.
Yeah, I kind of was wondering about that as well, because the cars match the color. As they drive up, the red car, yellow car, purple car, but their outfits seem to be like the diametrically opposed color, other than Mrs. White, who is wearing black, but she has like an overcoat on. And when she opens it up, it's almost like a peacock. She's like, you know, plumage, and she's bright, stark white on the inside. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, they're all wearing the opposite for some reason. I don't know myself why.
Man, you guys are very astute. I never even picked up on that.
Well, I've seen this movie dozens of times.
Is that like I'm guessing it's an intentional.
Oh, it's got to be
thing,
yeah.
Or do we know?
I don't know why, but yeah, it's got to be intentional, like, because it really is. They're dressed in the opposite color. Like Miss Scarlet is in green. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to look online at some images from the game to see if that also is Clue. My Google foo is failing me, but I'm not seeing anything obvious about that.
Well, I did also read that the rooms of the house off of the main hall are all clockwise in order that they are in the game. And the secret passages lead to the same places that they do in the games as well.
Yep. Yeah. And then apparently the floor tile in the hallway matches sort of what the board looks like with the squares that you move your pieces on.
I mean, you have to admire that level of detail.
Yeah.
In a movie like this, because I feel like it would have just been so easy to, you know, just take the name Clue and be like, oh, it's just a murder mystery, and just like have a murder mystery and just leave it kind of like at the names of the characters. But to actually go, you know, and make it so detailed that it actually like plays out like the game, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we open the movie on all the people arriving, and yeah, like Michael mentioned, in their own color of car. So like their game pieces are showing up to the mansion. But I love this whole introduction scene, like starting with Tim Curry showing up, Wadsworth the butler. It's so weird to see him again so soon after doing Rocky Horror. But
yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, really quickly if you're going to like this movie, because when Tim Curry's Wadsworth steps in the dog poop,
yeah,
and then he kind of like sniffs around, and then like he goes and talks to Yvette, and then she sniffs and looks at her shoe, and then when Mrs. White shows up, she sniffs. Like, if you don't think that's funny, you can just stop, because that's what you're getting for this movie, and I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, the runner of the dog shit is great. Yeah, because there's
I probably
at least
just stopped.
Oh no.
Oh no. Was Colin not a fan of this movie? Oh.
So we're going to change this to Colin is wrong. The episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're in New England, and it's 1954, and so, yes, we get introduced to our characters, starting with Wadsworth the butler, and then Colonel Mustard, Mrs. White, Miss Scarlet, Professor Plum, Mrs. Peacock, Mr. Green. There's just so much going on here. Like when Mr. Green shows up, for example, and Wadsworth goes, "Sit!" And Mr. Green sits down, right? No, not you. Mm-hmm. Not you, sir. The dogs. But so, okay, no, I got to go back to Colin here. Colin, what's going on in your mind right now?
So I wouldn't say that I didn't like the movie. The one thing I will say is the movie has... You need to go into it with, primed... With you, like, this sense of, there's a specific sense of humor required to watch and fully enjoy this movie. And I think that it's a sense of humor that's kind of like lost almost. So you need to like be primed for it going into it. And I think because I had never watched it before, it's just not at all like the modern day humor. It's very like kind of British, very understated, very, and I think for me it like, it's not until both times I watched it I felt the same way. It's like there were funny things that were happening, but it took me until almost like the third act where I was like, okay, my brain is set to now find these things funny. So then by the time you reach the end and Wadsworth is like running back and forth and doing all his stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, it's hilarious. And the scene, like the one alternate ending, I think when Evelyn, is that what the lady who has like the weird hat thing and glasses,
Mrs. Peacock,
the ending where she's the killer and they all run out and like I think it's Mr. Green is like flipping over Colonel Mustard, one of them is like all frazzled and Wadsworth slaps him, and then he turns around, and then the other guy slaps him back, and like that stuff's funny to me. But it's like all the stuff at the beginning. It was like even the dog poop thing. I honestly like didn't even really pick up on it until the second time I watched it. I completely missed that in the third and the first watch.
That's what I was trying to like. I kind of touched on is that there's so much of this is just like sight based humor. You know, you really have to be watching, and this isn't to like call anybody out or anything, and certainly not you, but I do the same thing. I watch Netflix on my phone, you know, and I'm looking up, and this isn't a movie that you can do that. I'm not saying you did, but it's the sort of thing where you really have to pay attention or you're going to miss so many things that I think make the movie great. One of my absolute favorite parts of this movie is near the end where they're going through all the different, who did it. I think it's at the part where Wadsworth throws Mr. Green into the bathroom, and then he comes out a second later and you hear the toilet flush. He's washing his hands. It was just like this stupid little moment, but if you're not watching for that, you don't get, oh, that's what happened. And it cracks me up so much when that happens. It's like he just comes out with the flush. I don't know why, but it just makes me laugh.
Yeah,
I like that too. But no, I agree, and I think that is one of the, like, the first time I watched it, I think if I had known, I would have almost, this is a movie I needed to watch like 5 times.
Mm, yeah.
Like two watches wasn't enough, because it's just like, I watched it the first time and I was kind of just like, watching it and doing other stuff. And it was like, I reached a point where I was like, I think I missed like half of this movie. And so then I like paid more attention on the second watch. But I agree with you, Michael. Like, I think, and this goes back to what I was saying, like, the humor is different and it's very understated. And it's like, if you're not like, you almost needed to be like locked in a theater, which is weird that people didn't flock to this movie to like watch in the theater. Cause I think that's like the way that you had to, this movie requires like appointment viewing,
total immersion
where nothing else is going to draw your attention, because you have to be focused or you're going to miss like these subtle little nuances.
Yeah, I completely agree. You miss so much. There's so much of this movie that's, you know, verbal and the wordplay and like the 1+1+2+1, but there's so much too that's like just visual you have to see. Like when Mr. Green can't find a seat he's just sort of casually going around him. He keeps trying to sit down, and everybody just keeps getting in the seat in front of him.
Yeah.
That cracks me up, but it's almost completely silent. It's like a, 30, 45 second scene of just him trying to sit down, and he can't because of other people. It's exactly my type of humor. It may not be for everybody, but it is absolutely for me because I crack up over that.
Yeah, it's definitely a slow burn. And so I can understand why, you were taken aback at first, not realizing what you had gotten into. Because, it is very dry and it's slow to get going. And it's so subtle to begin with. Like, once Tim Curry takes over, I mean, when Tim Curry takes over, it's a whole different movie, but it does still feel very much the same. But that's where, because of how much what he's doing is amplifying the jokes, like him picking Mr. Green up and tripping him and throwing him back down to the ground, stuff like that, you realize, oh, wait, when you watch it in high speed like this, yes, this is the kind of stuff that was going on. It just wasn't this manic before when I was watching, the first half of the movie where it really is the slow burn,
Well, yeah, like I feel like you can, just based on the last 30 minutes, you could have not paid attention and still fully understood what happened in the story because Wadsworth takes you all through everything.
Yeah.
But it's still those subtleties that you miss, the subtle comedy, I think, that you, that gets missed. And
one of my favorite lines that's just always stuck with me is, "Who are you? I'm the butler. What do you do?
I buttle, sir.
I mean, it's just, it's just such a subtle joke, but oh God, it kills me every time. The straight delivery of Tim Curry, it's just, I love him. I love him. Okay. I said it in Rocky Horror Picture Show. I love Tim Curry.
He is a national treasure. I love him. Protect him at all costs.
That's right.
I'd be curious to know, the numbers that you had for how much it grosses, is that worldwide or is that North America?
I think it's worldwide.
Okay.
You think it might have done better in England?
Yeah, I would be interested to know if this movie did better in England versus America, just because you have the Tim Curry factor, but also again the humor just speaks to me of more British style humor.
Well, yeah, because there's also the line, "Why would he want to kill you in public?" I think she meant in public, he threatened to kill him, right? It's this, wordplay that they've got going on. Mm. It's brilliant.
One of my favorite lines is when things are falling apart. I think this is when either the cop has shown up or the motorist, and everybody's getting frazzled, and they look in the study and go, "Yep, two corpses, everything's fine."
Yeah.
That's the level they're at now, that there's two dead bodies, and that's the status quo, and they're happy with that. It just cracks me up every time. Two corpses, everything's good.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't really have a frame of reference for the game then. So when they get to the unwrapping scene where they start pulling out all the weapons, what was going through your head at that point, Colin, when they pull out the candlestick and the rope and the knife? For someone that knew the game, it would be one of those moments of, they did the thing. Did this mean anything to you with your limited knowledge of this game?
No, again, to me, it was just right over my head. Okay. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I had the reference that a candlestick is used as a murder weapon in the game. But still, I was just kind of I recognize these are all potential murder weapons, but it didn't really resonate with me on an emotional level or anything like that.
You didn't get the inside joke going on.
Yeah, okay. No. I did there is a point where Wadsworth delivers a line that basically is the rule of the game, where he states we need to find out who the murderer is, where they killed the person, and what with what or whatever. And I was like, touche, I get that one.
Yeah, all the side characters that they've got, the cook, the motorist, the singing telegram girl,
da-da-da-da-da-da!
Yeah, that's Joan of Arc from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. We talked about her way back then. But, all those people are not actually part of the game. Even the butler isn't part of the game, unless it's the butler that gets murdered in the game. But, like, yeah, there is no butler or anything like that. So it's just the core six that are part of the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, in the game, like, what are the scenarios? Like, is it the similar scenario? Well, like, people just show up random to a part, to, like, a dinner party, or is it...
Well, how the game physically works is you've got cards, and there is a card for every weapon, there is a card for every room, and there is a card for every character. And so you shuffle up all the cards, and you select, you know, one person, one room, and one weapon, and you put it in an envelope, and you put that off to the side, and then you deal out the rest of the cards to everybody else.
Okay.
And then you start moving your token around the board, and when you get to a room, you say, okay, you know, I'm in the study. I believe that it was Miss Scarlet with a candlestick in the study. And then someone will go, oh, no, I have Miss Scarlet. So it's not Miss Scarlet. And then you, on your little tally sheet that you're keeping, you write down, okay, oh, it's not Miss Scarlet. You know, it's like Battleship where you're eliminating possibilities, you know.
Okay.
And then so at the end, you finally make your final declaration of, I say that it is this person with this weapon in this room. And if you're right, you win. If you're wrong, then the other two keep playing. I don't know. I think that, but.
Yeah. So you're supposed to reveal it secretly. Like if you make the final accusation, you look at the card secretly. And if you're wrong for anything, you just say, I'm wrong. And the game can continue with the other players.
Right.
So they don't know. And if I like to Sean's point, like if I say it's Miss Scarlet in the study with the revolver and Colin, you had Miss Scarlet, you wouldn't say I had Miss Scarlet. You would actually slide me one of those cards secretly.
Right,
I would look at it.
Right.
And then I would slide it back. So everyone else would not know that it wasn't Miss Scarlet, but I would know that, and then you would know that.
Yeah,
as well.
I forgot about the privacy aspect.
So one of the keys to playing the game is what you accuse. Like a lot of times, you ask things you already know the answer to. Like I might tell you it's Miss Scarlet, even though I have Miss Scarlet, because I'm actually trying to eliminate other
things.
Trying
to flush out the candlestick or something. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's actually not a bad game. I think, you know, if you play it with a certain level of people that like maybe you can really get into that, and it's. So it's like either play with young kids or people who are actually good at the game. Those are like the two scenarios that are fun for me. If you got people who don't really know what they're doing, but they're adults, it won't be very much fun, in my opinion. There is, coincidentally, a different game called Kill Dr. Lucky, which is the reverse of Clue. You are trying to kill Dr. Lucky without getting caught.
Okay.
So you have to move through this mansion and you have to get into a situation where you can see the doctor, but no one else can see you so that you can kill them and not get caught. So it's like the reverse of Clue. It's a lot of fun.
Where's the Ask Dr. Lucky movie?
Yeah.
There should be one.
Nice.
I mean, I might as well just do it right now. I've got nothing to segue into it with, but I think it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
no cars on the side of the road that you could identify, or no fine brandies or fine wines on the table with labels conspicuously turned towards the camera.
Well, not anything that I saw that was like obviously out there.
Okay.
That was all I actually found with Sponsorship Corner this week. Was in my research, they're driving specific vehicles. I didn't even bother writing them down, though, because it's not something I saw for myself. So I think this week, Clue is brought to you by Parker Brothers.
Yes.
Yes.
And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Corner, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I was so disappointed that it's like, there wasn't even like, you know, like, a brand on the record player or anything that I could see. Like it was, everyone was drinking their cognac out of, you know, like the fancy crystal bottles. There was nothing, and they weren't actually showing the signage on the car, but yeah, they were some beautiful cars, and I should probably know what they are just by sight, or I should be able to figure it out just by sight, but that's not a sponsor then, if that's the case, if I have to do that much work.
Yeah, maybe that was why the movie failed, because they didn't get enough sponsorship money in there, and that's why the budget wasn't made back. If like they could have made the movie for $10 million because they had like Coke sponsoring it, then maybe they would have made more money. But I just think it's, you know, again, artistic integrity.
Yeah.
For I don't know if that's true or not, but if they really wanted us to feel like it was in that period time, so I think the sponsorships would have broken that immersion. So I'll give them credit for really not doing much, because it's so obvious in so many movies, and this one really didn't do that.
Yeah, and this mm-hmm. one really lived in that 1954 world, like, because all of their discussions were all about, you know, like J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI and all these, you know, like scandals in Washington, and Mr. Green is not a homosexual. Oh dear. Like, you know, like
yes.
things like that. It's just, it's fun to live in that time and like, you know, without like being cheeky about it or anything, like, which a comedy movie could have easily made jokes that were like punching down when it came to joking about the time period.
What we learn is that the reason Mr. Boddy was blackmailing all of them because they were un-American, and Wadsworth's wife had friends who were socialists. That was her crime.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you guys, like, I watched this movie twice and I'm still unclear on how, like, I'm unclear on what the blackmailing scheme was. And was, like, they say that Mr. Boddy is a guest, but he's also the blackmail. Like, who is in charge of the scheme?
But it depends on which ending you think is the actual ending, because in two of them, Wadsworth is Wadsworth, and Mr. Boddy is the blackmailer. But in the third one, which is the canonical one based on the producers of the movie, Mr. Wadsworth is actually Mr. Boddy, and Mr. Boddy was actually his former butler. So Wadsworth was actually behind everything and was blackmailing. But they all did something. Colonel Mustard sold like radio parts. One politician wife was selling secrets. The psychologist
Professor
was having sex.
Plum.
Patients. Miss Scarlet was running a house of ill repute, as well as selling secrets. So they all were basically doing something that they were being blackmailed for.
And Mrs. White was married 5 times. 5? Yes, just the 5.
Yeah.
That's another throwaway line that I love, is how she says, just the 5.
Well, before that, my favorite is, how many husbands have you had? Mine or other people's? Yours.
Yeah,
just the 5. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's a bit of a black widow. She's a bit of a murderer.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it wasn't, because even in the ending with Scarlet and the Miss Peacock ending, it kind of seemed to me like they were still there because they were being blackmailed and just happened to commit murder, but like it didn't seem like they were necessarily like orchestrating the entirety of the thing.
Yeah. Well, and Miss Scarlet seems proud. She doesn't seem like she cares that she's being blackmailed, right? Or what she's being blackmailed for.
Mm-hmm.
She happily announces what she does for a living.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that it holds up to too much scrutiny. Like, if you really analyze each potential ending, I think there are continuity errors within any mm-hmm. of them, in particular the third one. Like, if that's supposedly the real one, I don't know that it holds up very well, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that, like, it just doesn't bother me that much, just because the slapstick nature of it and the humor. And it's my favorite ending when you find out, again, have obviously, you know, the depictions of homosexuality notwithstanding, I could care less that Mr. Green was or wasn't homosexual, but the way that's played off with, and now I'm going to go home and have sex with my wife, just cracks me up. And then he does a thing with, they're all murderers, and if you wonder who killed him, it was me in the hallway with the revolver. Like, it's just, I love the way that one plays out, even though it probably doesn't make any sense.
I like that one the best. I also like when that's the one where, like, the police chief or whatever that guy is comes in and he's just, like, immediately, like,
Howard Hessman.
He's just immediately, like, who done it?
And that, he's like, they all did it.
Yeah.
No, and I know what you mean, though, about that. Yeah, I'm going home to sleep with my wife. Yeah. And, like, that's one of those moments where, I mean, take it back to Smallville. I could totally have seen Michael McKean playing Superman back then.
Mm.
You know, in that moment when he takes off his glasses and, you know, suddenly he's cool FBI guy.
Right.
The complete polar opposite of what we've been seeing throughout the entire movie with him.
Yeah. And again, the fact that he is the homosexual character is played for laughs in how he responds to Yvette compared to everyone else. Because time and time again, I mean, everyone else in this movie leers at her. Even some of the female characters just leer at her and her exposed bosom. But every time he's just like, whatever. No, thanks. You know, like when they're trying to split up, everyone wants to go with Yvette and he's just like, no, I'm good. And I think it's played really, really well because, you know, there's a supposed shame for him being homosexual, even though he himself says, I'm not ashamed of it. He tells it. So I kind of think they do a pretty good job in honesty in not punching down, but they do play it for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least with the one ending.
Mm-hmm. Go home and sleep with my wife.
Yeah, I do have to say, like, okay, so who is your favorite character? Out of the, I guess the core seven, or I guess out of the whole movie, like maybe Mr. Body's your favorite character. I don't know. Yeah, I have to be honest. I don't really like the Mr. Body character. Like, I just don't like some of his delivery. But I love the fact that the first guy that dies is named Lee Ving.
Mm-hmm.
The actor is
supposedly
Lee Ving.
That's why he was actually cast. He's not an actor. He is the front man for a band.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
And he was basically. He was basically hired because his name was Lee Ving, and they wanted Mr. Body to be Lee Ving. Like, it's a pun. His casting was a pun, but I agree. He is by far the worst actor of the bunch, but it makes sense. He's not actually an actor. He was there for, like, probably one day and whatever.
Yeah, and the cook, this was her first performance, too. Yeah. Even though, like, all you see is her chopping some vegetables in the beginning, and then she's a body for the rest of the movie. when they go all Weekend at Bernie's on her.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, so anyway, well, yeah. What? Who would you say is your favorite character?
Oh my gosh, it's hard because I think they all have their moments. But you know, if you take all the endings together, everybody gets a moment. But probably my top three: it's Wadsworth / Mr. Body, because again, depends on
which
version
it
is. Mr. Green, I think Michael McKean does really well, and then Miss Scarlet, I think. She does a great job in all the endings, particularly the one where it turns out she's the person who did everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, end of the day, it's probably Mr. Green, Michael McKean.
Yeah, okay. Colin, would you have a pick for MVP here?
I really liked Scarlett. I liked her a lot.
Yeah?
And I agree. Like, I can't imagine Carrie Fisher. I don't think I would have liked her if Carrie Fisher played her, because I'm not to speak ill of the dead, but I'm not a very big Carrie Fisher fan in general. But
oh my god!
But I just
looking for a new best friend, Sean. Maybe I don't know.
But yeah,
apparently this was Colin's last appearance on the show.
But yeah, I just thought, like, I really liked her character. I like how she's just kind of like so brazen about what she does. I really like her when it turns out that she's the killer, just her, like, her swift gun pull from the purse, and she's just like, what? Of course it was me! Like,
yeah.
But I do love her turn in that ending with the, how'd you know it was me?
Yeah.
Like, where she suddenly, it's like, no, okay, how did I not outsmart you? She has that turn, which is a great one.
Yeah, he was like, true or false? She's like, true! How did you know? Who are you? Like, she's just so excited and giddy almost to be at that point. I just love it. And then the 1+2+1 is probably the most quotable, maybe most memorable part of the whole movie, and her part in that is just brilliant as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love Tim Curry as Wadsworth as well. Like his whole ending thing, where he's running around, that was probably my favorite part of the movie. I especially liked when they're going back to the kitchen and he sends everybody through the door and he goes the back way and then he's like the first time I watched it, I was like, did he actually just die? But no, he just goes to the floor and then continues on with the story.
Yeah, by now she was dead. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean. Like, that's the thing, is this movie really is, you watch the movie for the first half, and then you watch the recap of the movie you just watched in the second half. Like, that's all this movie is. Like, it's the same movie twice.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like the whole middle part is literally just to show you where the trap doors are.
Yeah.
And where all the secret passageways and all that. Like, I didn't really understand what they were going for. Like when they team up and then they're just like going through all these different secret passages and all that.
Yeah.
And then when I watched it the second time, I was trying to think, like, could I actually watch, like, can you watch the movie and see if you can solve it before you get to the end? Do you think that's possible?
No. No. I don't believe with, I mean, and again, it goes back to, depends on which ending you're going by, but I don't think there's really enough time that any of those people were separated to be able to do the things that are being set out in the explanation at the end. Any of them.
Yeah, there's definitely some inconsistencies. But I will note that when they do find the cook dead, Yvette isn't there. And that's like one of the big key reveals is that she wasn't there when we found the cook, because that's when she was actually killing Mr. Body the second time. She actually doesn't go with them. Like, she's in the room before when they all run in the kitchen. She's never there. She just doesn't show up. So that part is somewhat accurate. But there's other parts with, like, turning off the lights, like who did that and where they were. I don't think it all holds up very well.
I was trying to figure out if at the point, like after Wadsworth locks up all the weapons and then he goes to throw the key out the door, and
he actually does put it back in his pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says he put it in his pocket and then somebody else went in his pocket and replaced the key with another.
Yeah.
And if that happens, it happens too fast for me to notice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched that scene again because that also one of my favorite parts, when they go to throw the key and the motorist is there and they're all acting like so suspicious, and then they kind of turn and they have almost like a little football huddle when they're trying to decide what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is the moment when the key would have had to have been stolen. There's no way for us to see that. Like, it's not like the Sixth Sense where you can go back and watch it and see the key being stolen, because he's not even facing the right way and everybody's watching, so I don't think it actually happened. But again, my other podcast, besides the Smallville, the thing I do mostly podcasting is role-playing games, and there are so many things from this movie that I have stolen and put into how I role-play role-playing games and the stories I create role-playing games. But you know, I can't tell you how many times I've said we'll stack the bodies in the cellar, lock it, leave one by one, and pretend like this never happened. Yeah. Like, half the games I play, that's something my characters have said, because I absolutely love that. And the sort of the secret huddle and like telling people just to wait. And there, like, my sensibilities when it comes to role-playing games are foundational. This movie is foundational to how I role-play and how I build games. And I went off on a tangent, but one of my favorite games I've ever ran, I run a Dread game, which is where you use a Jenga tower for your mechanic.
Okay.
And it's Scooby-Doo meets Clue. It's 100% that's all it is. Basically, Scooby-Doo died 20 years ago, and the Scooby gang come back together in an old house. There's a butler that introduces them one by one. Then the lights go out, and then they're trapped in this house trying to figure out who actually killed Scooby-Doo. It is 100% Clue the movie meets Scooby-Doo, and it's amazing.
That's an amazing crossover right there.
I just have to ask, does every game end with you, like, when they find out who killed them, do you say, "And I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for you meddling kids"?
Well, each time it's a little different, so I can't say, but that definitely has come up at least once.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
As it should.
As it should, yes.
Yeah, well, talking about the huddles and stuff like that, I like all the little layers that are going on in all these group scenes. Like, because there is this fact that they're all in on this secret together and they're conspiring against whoever the newcomer is and not doing it well as a group. I mean, the most suspicious group of people. But I even love when they pair up. I mean, we mentioned it a few minutes ago, but when they pair up and the whole time every pair is playing the fact that, okay, we're doing this together, but I don't want to be in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I love seeing the different variations of that. Like the physical acting of Michael McKean and Colleen Camp coming up the staircase in the attic. I mean, that looks downright dangerous. But like, even Miss Scarlet and Professor Plum, when they go down to the cellar as well, where they're like, ha 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 ha, you know, and trying to get around each other. Like, I definitely love seeing these actors play these different layers of emotions that are going on with them.
I 100%, even if you don't think this movie is funny, go back and watch that scene of Mr. Green and Yvette coming up the stairs. That is just a masterclass performance in physical comedy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
See, what else do I...
And we can just quote the movie some more. It's always fun for me.
We should have had a I used to like this one piece theater for Michael to do.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you kick off every one of your episodes like that. It's a segment we bring in every once in a while. And I did consider it, but I really should have.
But which one would you pick? There are so many quotable lines from this movie.
Well, that's true. That is true. I mean, yeah, like the dinner scene with the chilled monkey brains and all that. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
So Colin, again, is this person who is wrong and doesn't like this movie as much.
Hey, I never said I didn't.
A favorite quote? Like, is there one of those that stood out to you that you just thought was funny?
Favorite quote.
Or moment.
Yeah, or moment.
I can't think of a quote, but my favorite moment is in that one ending when the guy, it's just the double slap is just so funny. They just do it so, it's that thing where it's like, they just do it so nonchalantly, I guess. And it just, they both people just play it so straight except for the guy getting hit. And just the visual of it, I just thought was hilarious. And again, like I like Tim Curry. So even when he's like I can't think of a line specifically, but just his whole explanation of like how we're doing and everything he's doing, like throwing Mr. Green into the bathroom. I really like that as well.
Yeah,
he starts to drag Mrs. White up the stairs, and she falls, and he just keeps going, and she just sort of like falls onto the stairs as he goes up.
Yeah.
Or the and you got a letter and you got a letter and you got a letter and you got a letter. Get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what is the long story short? Too late.
Too late. Yeah. Yep. That's one that I definitely still quote to this day.
So many times. Long story short. Too late.
Too late. I do always wonder though, like with some of the side characters, like okay, so they explain some of them in the ending, but like the motorist, is he just really that unlucky that he showed up, or is he actually part of it? Like
he's the driver. Colonel Mustard's driver,
right.
who knew that he was
in all the endings?
That's before
the blackout.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay. I think it has to be intentional within the world, because everyone who shows up, other than the FBI at the end, spoilers, is somehow connected to someone in the house. So I have to believe that maybe his car wasn't supposed to break down. Maybe he was invited there and he not knew why, but it happened to break his car down. But again, it doesn't really make sense because the cop sees the car and that's why he shows up. But the cop also turns out to be...
the car is actually broken down.
Yeah. So
or up on something.
So it seems like maybe it was just like a coincidence, but I have to think that it was intentional. Like my belief is that Wadsworth / Mr. Body orchestrated all of this.
Yeah. Okay.
I did feel bad for the... I felt like the singing telegram lady needed... She should have got more time. She should have got more time to actually be a part of things.
Yeah, I am your singing telegram. Boom.
In every scenario, though, is Yvette... Like, is her part of, like, killing Mr. Body and all that? Is that's all... That all stays, right?
Was that pre-blackout as well? Like, is it always Yvette? Maybe that's why when you said that Yvette's definitely not in that scene. Is that part of all three endings then? I don't remember.
I don't know that it's I don't think that's addressed specifically. But yeah, she isn't there when the cook is killed, which is... Body is found, which is pre the lights going out. Because the lights going out is basically the trigger for where the movie diverges. Everything is exactly the same up until the point the lights go out. And then you have the three different endings that branch from there. So I think Yvette, I think she does probably kill Mr. Body officially in every scenario.
Yeah, she would. Okay. Because the thing that always hinges on is who has the gun. Right, yeah. and it's always Yvette dropped a gun, and then the person picked it up from where she dropped it. So
under the chandelier. I love the scene like after the blackout does happen in the movie, where they're all just as a group moving from room to room, looking at all the new dead bodies, like, and just the stone faced as they're like looking out at the singing telegram girl on the front step. Yeah, and then it's like, okay, well, let's start moving some bodies. Like, you know,
just... even the cut for that, where they go like they're looking at her, and then it's literally just like the line from that scene is playing as it cuts to them in the living room, just dropping her corpse
from like shoulder height. The scene where they pretend to be like making out with the bodies and they're like holding up the cook and then doing the arms on the shoulders.
Yeah.
Again, just so much physical work here. I love it.
Well, and just in the mistaken moment when the cop comes out of there and he's like, where he goes up to Wadsworth and says, "Oh no, I'm not going to arrest anybody. There's nothing wrong going on here."
Yeah.
And just, yeah, Tim Curry's reaction of, "There isn't." Like,
yeah, this is America.
Just people having fun. Yeah.
I felt like I was denied. I really wanted to see someone get hit with that chandelier.
Yeah.
Almost.
Twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why I kept thinking, like, there needs to be, and the movie needs to go just a little bit longer. Third time's the charm.
The chandelier is actually part of the final plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another line I like is when Wadsworth puts the cop in the study and says, "Help yourself to a drink, but not the cognac, just in case."
Just in case.
Just in case of what? But yeah, like the fact that they're going around locking people into the room. Oh God, I love this movie. I don't know. Yeah. I mean,
again, that's all we're doing. We're just recounting our favorite moments, which is like every moment. Like if I think about it, it's like, oh, that's a funny moment. That's a funny moment. This movie is so much fun for me.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I guess, oh, holy shit. I wrote it down. Okay. In the first ending, Yvette kills Mr. Body and the cook. Scarlett kills cop Yvette and the telegram girl. Yeah. And Wadsworth is the FBI in that one. The second ending is Miss Peacock. The chilled monkey brains is what gave her away.
Yeah, in the second ending, Miss Peacock did everything. She kills everyone, which doesn't work. There's no way that's possible.
Stack the bodies in the cellar, do nothing, and they sing "She's a Jolly Good Fellow," and she gets arrested outside, and Wadsworth is the FBI in that one as well.
I think that's where Mr. Green gets slapped, because she's like, "Mrs. Peacock was a man?" When because the FBI always gets their man.
Yeah.
Mrs. Peacock was a man? Slap, slap. Ah, oh, that's so fucking funny.
Yeah. And then the third ending is Professor Plum kills Mr. Body. Mrs. Peacock killed the cook. Colonel Mustard killed the motorist. Mrs. White kills a vet. Scarlet killed the cop. And Wadsworth killed the telegram girl and is Mr. Body. But Mr. Green is FBI. So how did he get himself planted then into this situation where he'd be able to catch everyone but not catch everyone?
My guess is that the plant was that he wasn't actually a homosexual. He pretended to be a homosexual to get blackmailed.
Okay.
And so he let out that because he wasn't homosexual. That was, again, the whole reveal is that he actually was not. So that must have been the plan, is that he put himself in position to be blackmailed for this thing that he wasn't, so he would be in the scheme. But don't think about it too much.
So I think it's safe to say everybody's favorite ending, though, was the third one, right? Where everyone had a hand in it.
To me, that's the most poetic, where they're all bad people. They all did something wrong. I think that makes the most sense, and I think is the most satisfying.
Yeah.
I agree. I forgot. I was just refreshing my memory of some of the quotes from this so I could join in with you guys. And I can't remember why, but for whatever reason, I think it's just Tim Curry's delivery, but when he does the, like, Casablanca quote to Scarlett, I laughed so hard. I thought that was so funny.
Or the Gone with the Wind quote.
Oh, is that?
Frankly, Miss Scarlett, I don't give a damn. Yeah.
Oh, man. Man, I just need to go home.
No, Casablanca would be like, here's looking at you, kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Of all the houses and all the world, these murders had to happen in mine.
Yeah.
Anything else that I may have missed?
It's a perfect movie. Everyone should watch it.
I don't have anything.
So I did read, though, that there was a fourth potential ending, which was written and filmed, where Wadsworth poisons everyone with a slow-acting toxin in their drinks and was responsible for all the other deaths as well, and then gets torn apart by the dogs outside.
Wow!
As he's trying to escape. Like, there's a lot of dogs on this property. Like, he only chains up the two at the beginning, and, you know, he has to have the bones to distract them. But there's also the one outside the conservatory as well that jumps up on the glass. That one's just free range. Like, why did no one get attacked by that one when they showed up in the beginning?
My canon theory here is that those two dogs were basically protecting the front door. And so, because their chain was long enough originally to get, if you went try to get in the front door, they could reach you. And then after throws the bones, he shortens the chains. So I think the other dogs were running the grounds, but they were sick, like they couldn't get to the front
of
the house.
They're fenced in, okay.
They're fenced in along the sides opposite, away from the door. That would be my guess.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I guess torn apart by dogs is the line that they'll draw when it comes to murder in a movie.
Yeah. So that's weird because I don't think I've ever heard that before. Like, as much as I love this movie, I don't think I've ever heard that there was a fourth ending. But there's another event that I run at a catacomb, the murder mystery LARP that I run. Okay. And that's kind of the setup, is that someone dies and it turns out everyone in the party has been poisoned. And the only way to get the antidote is to find the killer. So that's my reason why no one just leaves. Because that's the thing with this movie. Why doesn't everyone just leave?
Yeah.
Like, once the body, they could just go home. So I do a thing where I'm like, okay, everyone here is poisoned. You have to find the antidote. And to do that, you have to find the killer. It makes more sense in the thing. But it's just funny that I basically have stolen something I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, because the only thing that they really have to keep the people there are kind of, but wait, there's more before you leave. You know, that's the only reason why they managed to lock the door and not, like, get out some other way. Or, you know, yeah, it's the but wait, there's more theory. Yeah.
I think if they would have went with that fourth ending instead of having Wadsworth torn apart by dogs, I would have suggested that he just start dressing in drag and then hire a bunch of alien henchmen and then start work on using the body parts that he's collected from these dead bodies to create, like, a Frankenstein-like model sexy boy.
Yeah.
And then and then we could have just gone with, like, I mean, it's almost the same scenario. He just lives in this house, so you just, it's a direct Rocky Horror Picture would just be the sequel to Clue.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could say that that's sort of what happens on the third ending, because Wadsworth gets shot. And they say he's dead, but I don't think anyone checks the body, so
that's
maybe
true.
He isn't actually dead.
Needed to change his identity.
Yes.
Needed to go into hiding.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, but I would have liked to have found out that the killer was inside each and every one of us all along. Well, there we go. That is Clue. Now, Colin, Michael, on IMDb, it scored a 7.3 out of 10, has a Metascore of 39. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 66% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 86%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a candlestick to the noggin, hit us with some reviews.
Alrighty then. Aiden I says, 4 out of 5 stars, this movie is hilarious. It made a suspenseful board game about a murder into a hilarious comedy. This movie doesn't have the best acting. I love Tim Curry, and it can definitely get boring. It also has a great ending, which I love the triple ending.
Okay.
Angelina D says, 5 out of 5 stars, one of the best comedies ever. I can watch over and over, and I am now showing it to new generations in a film studies class.
I think it deserves that. I mean, Michael pointed out some of the amazing physical comedy already. I mean, there's so many different types of humor going on here. I feel like there's like between the physical and the dry humor and like the running jokes and everything like that. I think it's kind of, I think there could be a lot that could be enjoyed by a film studies class.
Yeah. Rosie R says 3.5 out of 5 stars. I'm no film critic, and this movie is certainly not perfect, but I honestly found this movie very entertaining to watch and extremely funny, and I found myself rewinding moments to rewatch the funny quips and gags that happen. This film was filled with small, easy-to-miss funny moments that really added to the film's charm, and I found myself laughing out loud more times than I can count. I'm late watching this movie, but I would absolutely recommend it for some light entertainment. It's a great movie if you don't expect it to be great.
Okay. that's kind of a concise ending to that, sure.
Yeah.
It's a great movie if you don't expect it to be great.
Yeah.
Grant W, 2 out of 5 stars, says it is entirely aware of its ham-filled camp, but really, after the silly vaudevillian gags have worn out their novelty, we are left with obnoxious characters who won't shut up, nonsensical contrivances, and a mystery that nobody would give a damn about unless they were really drunk. If one has to be intoxicated to enjoy a film, that's not exactly a ringing endorsement.
Okay.
And then the last one is Gary K, 1.5 out of 5 stars, says, a good rule of thumb is to avoid any movie based on a board game, and this is a good example. I can think of only one exception, the original Jumanji, and that was based on a board game that the producers themselves invented. Clue is a frenetic, confused mess that I couldn't follow. The characters are stock figures, and one doesn't care what happens to any of them. Many meet their demise. The entire movie takes place in one household, so it must have been made on a shoestring budget. Except for paying the television harvested B-rated Madeline Kahn and Martin Mull a few dollars.
Oh, boy.
The movie was offered free on Amazon Prime, and my kids 10 and 11 liked it, but I thought it was a waste of time.
Wow. Oh, that hurts my heart.
That there are a lot of wrong people, Colin. At least you're not alone. Because this movie is 10 out of 10. Perfect. Flawless.
If you could make a board game into a movie, what would you choose?
Ooh. Pandemic. Just kidding. That's become a reality TV show.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Like, Clue seems like...
Like, are you talking, like there's, like, Clue and like, the Milton Bradley Parker Brother games, or are you talking, like, any board game, like, adult board games and stuff as well?
Oh, sure. Why not? Anything. Like, that's a tricky question, right? I mean, because there's not really anything that is as, like, character-based as something like this, is there?
Yeah. Huh. I'm trying to think, like
Operation the game or the movie.
Could you make like opera? Yeah. Could you make what kind of game would Operation be, or like what would Monopoly the movie look like, or
yeah.
Hungry Hippos
the movie.
Have you seen I think it's on Facebook. There's a bunch of like fake movie posters for movies like that. So they, like basically Operation kind of looks like Saw, and Hungry Hippos kind of looks like Jaws. There's like a giant hippo coming up to eat somebody. They're really well done. Really funny, but I can't remember any other than those two. But there was like seven or eight of them.
Yeah.
That were really, really well done. I'm looking at my board game shelf. I have so many board games. Like, basically, the board game library for a convention is my game library. So I'm just looking at my wall of games, trying to think of what I would make into a movie. But a lot of them is sort of reverse engineered. Like, one of my all-time favorite movies is The Thing, which is based on a short story called Who Goes There. So they made a game called Who Goes There, which is sort of like based on the movie The Thing. Not really, but enough, but... But basically, but to make a movie out of that game would be to make the movie The Thing, which already exists and is perfect. There's House on Haunted Hill, which I think is based on a movie.
Yeah.
That's like a horror, a haunted house, so any haunted house movie would work.
Which was based on a 1950s version of House on Haunted Hill as well. There's two versions of House on Haunted Hill already.
Ah.
Yeah.
So maybe I would go with Jenga, just because Jenga. Then I would find a way to make that work. That would be my goal and my difficulty. I would self-make. How would I make Jenga the movie?
Mousetrap the movie?
I think I would do Ticket to Ride.
Oh, nice.
Ticket to Ride.
Because then you could make, like, if you could do something with, it would be, like, speed. That's how I would do it. I would make it, like, you had to do something with a bunch of trains, and you had to kind of, like, get on a bunch of trains before they all met in the center and crashed and avert disaster.
Yeah. Taking some license there with the conceit.
Well, you could make a... Yeah. A sequel to Snakes on a Plane and make it Snakes and Ladders, the movie.
Mm.
Get these motherfucking snakes off my motherfucking ladders. Okay, so... So yeah, we've got 7.3 and 86 from audiences, and we've got 39. Oh, that one really hurts. And 66 from critics. So, Michael already said 10 out of 10. Like, is that really where you sit with this?
Yeah. This is absolutely, in my mind, a perfect movie. I wouldn't... Again, I don't even want to put Carrie Fisher in it, because I think it's so good.
Yeah.
No, for me, this is literally a perfect movie. I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they straight into the point. Okay, so Colin, we've talked it through a little bit more. Where does this sit for you though? Now that you're kind of in on the joke, now that you know all that sort of thing, like, how do you really feel about Clue?
It's hard, man. It's really hard.
I'll still invite you back on my show no matter what you say.
to be honest, part of me feels like I hate passing judgment on movies that I know internally I just didn't get it. Okay. I just didn't like. To me, I feel like I need to watch this movie a few more times, and maybe like with the right people to like really get it. Because I just kind of, I think I just watched it kind of rushed, and I probably missed a lot of things that I you know might have made it better. Or it's just one of those things where it's like you just do need to watch it like a few times through to really like pick up on everything. So It's hard. I would say like I didn't not enjoy it. I really like the ending. To me, the movie kind of is just like the last half is enjoyable enough to kind of make it fun. It takes a long time for me to took a long time for me to figure out really what was happening and following all the characters. So I don't know. Where do I fall? Where do I ultimately fall? I feel like I'm just filibustering right now.
I'm wondering whether going into it, whether like did you know it was going to be a murder mystery, first of all?
I knew it was going to be a murder mystery, but I thought, and I knew it was going to be a comedy, but I didn't think it was going to be so slapstick comedy.
So you were expecting more like the humor of Knives Out or yeah, Murder on like the something... Orient Express, where it's like, yeah, they don't take themselves too seriously, but I,
yeah.
Okay.
So I think that, again, like I said before, I think the humor, I just wasn't primed to find this movie like as funny as Michael clearly does. I don't know. I would give it about a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a bad movie. It's definitely a movie I would watch again. And I think having watched, I'm also like learning about how good Tim Curry is. Mm-hmm. Like I had never seen, this is the second movie I've ever seen Tim Curry in. And the first one was
Home Alone.
When we watched
Home Alone 2.
Oh yeah. Home Alone. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, not where I've seen movies where he's featured, but not like movies where he's like the guy.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how many other Tim Curry led movies are there out there though. I really don't think that. I think he's more often than not just the sidekick kind of guy.
I mean,
with this one, they definitely went to the trouble of making sure that they introduced everyone in alphabetical order. Instead of, and declared it on screen, didn't they? Isn't this the one where they say at the beginning in alphabetical order?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm gonna go six out of ten.
Okay. Yeah.
With an asterisk that I'll watch it. I'll watch it more and maybe appreciate it more later.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that when something like Adam Sandler's murder mystery, the one with Courtney Cox, the Netflix one, when that one came out, I remember I watched that one and the whole time I was sitting there wishing it was Clue, because this is a movie that I found funny and that one not so much, right? So I guess I like the humor in my murder mysteries. I've always been a sucker for like sitcoms that end up doing a murder mystery episode or something like that. I'm just sitting here scrolling through Tim Curry's
that's what IMDb. I'm doing as well.
the one thing I kept thinking about when I was watching this movie though was like, in a world where Netflix has the ability to do these kind of like choose your own adventure movies,
yeah,
I feel like Clue is the perfect candidate,
yeah,
for that type of scenario. Like I would have loved, like say even when they all split up, if you have the opportunity to be like select, you know, which room they go into or whatever, that kind of stuff. And I just think there's cool opportunity to do stuff like that with with a concept like Clue or even other board game movies, probably.
Yeah.
Supposedly there is a remake in the works. It's been in pre-production and, like, you know, developmental stages for years and years. But I think Ryan Reynolds is attached to be Wadsworth / Mr. Body in that one. Yeah. And then you mentioned sitcoms. I don't know if you watched the show Psych, but they had a very much Clue homage episode later in their run where they had a murder mystery and Sean was doing the whole running through the house and bringing people to and fro and explaining what happened. It's definitely a Clue homage.
Yeah, see, I don't remember, or I've never seen Psych, but I do feel like there's also an episode of Community where Abed is doing the similar type scenario as well.
I love Community. I've seen that show, that season, or the whole run multiple times, but I cannot remember that episode right now. You're probably right.
I don't know if I'm making it up, but I feel like there was a murder mystery episode, but it's so hard to remember with, like, all the paintball episodes and all the, you know, everything else that is so wacky on Community. It seems like something that's up their alley, and for some reason I'm remembering it that way, but I could be way off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so this is one where yeah, I love this movie. I may not go 10 out of 10 like Michael did, but I mean, like, I'm a high 80s, low 90s on this movie. This is a comfort viewing movie to me. And the fact that you can, like, find so many different layers, you can listen to so many different types of stories that are going on here. You can watch it through once and you can listen to, like how they all link up and everything that's going on with the FBI and Washington and all that. Or you can go through once and just watch just the slapstick humor or find just the, you know, the throwaway lines that they have in this movie. Like, there's so many layers going on that I find it entertaining on a few different levels. And so, yeah, I could easily go for a 90% on this movie, and I do love it.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I sit for Clue. Well, there we go. That's Clue, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A big thank you to our special guest, Michael Ross. Michael, time to plug the shit out of your stuff. Where where can people find you if they want to hear more about Smallville or if they want to hear more about your role-playing stuff?
So for Smallville, the podcast is called Farm to Fable. And again, both Colin and Sean have been guests on there. So if nothing else, go listen to those episodes and see if you like them. And then maybe listen to some of the others. But we're basically rewatching the entire Smallville run, all 10 seasons, all 200 and something episodes, you know, 1 week at a time. It's a ton of fun. I love the show, but it's got some, you know, silliness in there. And we try to call that out lovingly when we can. And then the RPG Academy is where I got started. I've been podcasting with that for about 9.5 years, and you know, the show has evolved obviously over 9.5 years. A lot of things have changed, co-hosts have changed, but for the most part we're just trying to help people learn how to play role-playing games. So if it's something you've heard of but you've never actually experienced, we can teach you how to get started, how to have more fun doing it, how to do it with less anxiety or nervousness if that's something you're worried about. We can expose you to games that maybe you're not familiar with, even if you have played some of the more common bigger ones, like D&D is probably the most famous, but it's by far not the only game out there. And then I also run a convention in November. So by the time this comes out, it'll be too late. But maybe next year, if you want to come to Dayton, Ohio, and play some games, including the Scooby-Doo Dread or Murder Mystery LARP, find me. And just online, Twitter, at the RPG Academy. It's easiest to find me there.
Right on. Well, thank you for returning the favor and coming to hang out with us for a little while. It's much appreciated. We had a blast.
Happy to do it. Colin, do you have a favorite movie I can come on and hate?
Well, we already did Drop Dead Fred.
I got tons. Yeah, we already did Drop Dead Fred, which was probably the most prime candidate for that. But you know what? If there's one that's especially, like, partial to me, I'll let you know, and you can have a.
How do you feel about Independence Day?
Oh, we already did Independence Day, It didn't go that well this year.
Okay, because I hate that movie.
Okay.
I actually wrote a paper in college about how dumb that movie was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think on our episode I talked about how when I was much younger I loved that movie, but when I watched it when we did it, I thought it was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. So we already
he
already beat you to that one, yeah.
Right, well, you make me a list. Make me a list of movies you love you haven't done yet, and I'll pick one I hate.
All right, sounds good.
If you like that show, one thing you could do to really help us out is, well, tell your friends. It's so important to just tell people about podcasts that are trying to grow an audience. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars and a review. Doesn't matter what you say in the review, it's not for our egos. Just go in there, give us 5 stars, and let science take over and do the rest and help drive us up the charts, help us get noticed. Or if you want to go one step further and you've got a couple extra bucks a month and you want to become a producer of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and get a shout out on our show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our episodes, as well as our social media. We have Instagram, we have Facebook, we have Twitter. Go give us some likes, give us some comments, give us some shares, and drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne, all one word, @gmail.com, and let us know what movies you used to like. And then maybe we'll have Michael come back on and he can shit all over your movie instead of mine.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.
Awesome.